All right, Ethan, I'm going to put some names in the chat and you're going to tell me how to pronounce them, okay?
Okay. Simon Destieux.
Okay. How about this one?
Strulhalm
Liegrid. Okay. I've heard Liegrid. I've heard Liegrid. I've heard Liegrid.
Christina Retz Retzova.
Restsova? Retsova?
I don't know.
Okay, final one. This
Okay.
is the final boss.
I think the last name is Nig Matalina, but I don't know how to say the first name.
Nigmatilina. I think she was Uliana Kasheva, but she just got married. Welcome back to the Brian and Ethan Biathlon podcast, where we obviously don't know how to pronounce names. But getting a bunch of haters in the chat saying we don't know how to pronounce anything. So there
I
you go.
know.
We did our best.
We try. The best we can go off of is the British commentators say on Eurovision.
All right, welcome back to Brian and Ethan's Biathlon podcast. We are now on Spotify, Google, and Apple, so you can head on over to those apps. Just type in Biathlon, and we're like one of the only Biathlon podcasts on there. Actually, I don't know if you want to type in Biathlon because then you're going to get all the other competitors for us. So just go Brian and Ethan's Biathlon podcast. You'll find us, and we also have a podcast website, and you can leave us a 1 minute voice message. So if you want to leave your feedback about what's going on, or you want to leave us, drop us a line just to say hi, head on over there. You can learn how to leave a voice message, and then if we like what you have to say, maybe we'll include it in a future episode. But let's just dive right into it. Holy smokes, freaking awesome racing this weekend, Ethan. And let's start with the women's pursuit because Elvira Oeberg, first victory in the books. What did you think?
I mean, I couldn't say I didn't see it coming. I think everyone was kind of just waiting for it to happen after how she started the season, but I think the race played out exactly how she needed it to win. I think it came down to her ski speed in the last lap, but her shooting was awesome. Ski speed was super fast, and it was a pretty great race.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's just such this like, I don't know, this I think there's a common theme over the entire week that there was just a few athletes who were just on. And we'll talk about some of those other athletes a little bit later, but it just seemed like Oyberg, Elvira Oyberg was not going to not win that race. You know what I mean? It just kind of seemed like while she was competing, it was just like this is her race, and everyone else can try, but this is her race, and that's pretty crazy considering she has never even won a World Cup race before.
Yeah, and like I said, like you said, like people were on, and there were definitely some people that were not on this week, like Tyrell Eckhoff, but we can talk about that later. But I think it felt like the whole race that Oeberg was going to win. Like after that first lap when she made up so much time on Roseland, it was hard to believe that someone else was going to win that race.
Yeah, and I mean Julia Simon, you have to give a huge shout out to her. I mean, local, it's a local race. The fans, absolutely absurd. Like watching all the videos of people, all the World Cup people posting on their social media about the fans just going absolutely nuts, like just crazy, super crazy. She just couldn't get the job done because Elvira was just on just another planet right now. But no, super, super exciting for Elvira to get her first win. And like you said, I feel like everyone sort of kind of saw it coming a little bit. It's just really a matter of time before she just had the right day because she was skiing so freaking fast compared to everyone else. And yeah, no, finally just it just fell into place. Her shooting, she felt that her shooting was not a good representation of what she was capable of, and she was finally able to shoot 95% on a day where she had a pretty good start position. So yeah, I mean, just wire to wire, super solid. And yeah, I mean, nothing more you can say about it. What do you think? Is Alvera gonna be the, is she gonna be the one to beat moving forward?
I think it's hard to say no to that question. I think she's clearly got the ski speed, and if she can shoot at least one within one shot of the leaders, then she has a chance to win just about any race she enters.
And I guess the only reason I ask is because her sister, Hanna Øyburd, beat out Marta Ulsbu-Roysland to the finish line. And if you asked me to put my money down going into that last lap, who was going to win, I would have put Roysland, just because I feel like she has a lot of fight. And the fact that Hanna was able to, you know, I don't think that Hanna won that competition. I think Roysland lost it a little bit. And so I'm just wondering if Marta Ulsbu-Roysland is starting to show some cracks in her armor a little bit, maybe. Is she, is she showing that maybe she's not as dominant as we might have thought in the past?
I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I think she did lose this race, and her missing three targets didn't really help her cause, considering everyone else around her had one or two misses in the whole race. But I think you have to kind of question her tactics a little bit on that last lap, when Hanna Øyburd just went right around her going that last downhill before the uphill into the finish. And I think that's kind of where she lost it. Had she stayed in front and kept her line and gotten the inside line into the finish, I think she would have won that race.
Yeah, and it seemed a little it seemed risky too, because it seemed like she just went for it off the line, and there was no strategy of like, oh, maybe I'll let Hanna lead for a little bit and I'll relax and then try to get her back. It just seemed like Roysland's plan was just go for it, and Hanna was able to just easily stay right with her and then pass her at the end. So yeah, I don't know. It was pretty interesting to see that duel play out the way it did. I kind of expected it to be a little bit more competitive, considering both these women are very high on the overall standings. Hanna being sixth overall, and Roysland even wearing the yellow bib. It's like I kind of expected them to be a little bit more tactical in their fight, but didn't seem like there was any tactics at all. Wondering what your thoughts are on Tyra Leckhoff heading home after the sprint, even though she had a better sprint than she has had in the lead up to the season. But it seemed like she just seemed like she sort of showed up, and I don't even know why she even went if she was only going to do the sprint and not stay for the pursuit, because she qualified for the pursuit, but she just, didn't go.
Yeah, I don't know. I was wondering that when I was looking at the start list and saw that she wasn't starting. But I wonder if she was just kind of not super happy with the way that biathlon was going for her. And maybe after the sprint, she just felt like she needs to start her time off right then and there, and that the pursuit maybe wasn't going to be a good thing for her. So I wonder if her decision to go home was kind of like a self-care decision to make sure she's ready to go when the season starts back up again in January.
Yeah. I mean, her first races in Östersund were in the high 20s, low 30s. Then they went to Hochfilzen, and she was, finally kind of came back. Just sixth place in the sprint, dropped a little bit in the pursuit, and then another 11th place in the sprint in Annecy, and just decided to head home. And it almost seemed like it wasn't planned. It almost seemed like she was going for like the podium, or if she didn't get the podium, she's just heading out. And I hope she's okay. I hope she's able to find some respite. I know, listening to interviews with her in the past, she's one who is always very vocal about, kind of needing that social outlet, that relaxation away from biathlon, or else she'll start going stir crazy. So I wonder if maybe the competition was just getting a little too much for her. She started getting into a bad mental spot, and now she's just, I'm going to go home, enjoy Christmas, make love, as she said in an interview last year, and then, just come back ready and stronger than ever. All right, moving on. Missed shot. We're going to have to give it to us on this one, Ethan. We didn't get an episode out last week. So. Well, it's okay. Yeah. I was traveling for some biathlon competition, as I still coach as my day job, and I know that you are still finishing up college and had maybe some racing of your own going on. So, you know, it happens. We still watch biathlon. We still love it. Cut us some slack. Also, another missed shot for me personally. Johannes Dahle got sent down to the IBU Cup. Oh, my Lord. I am so far off with that prediction. It's not even funny.
If you gave Brian a bunch of crap for his prediction earlier in the season, you can go ahead and give him some more, considering that Dahle is now back on the IBU Cup.
Listen, there's still plenty of time. If he comes back after the Christmas break and wins every single race for the remainder of the season, he can still win the overall. So don't count it. Don't count him out yet, and don't call it a comeback. All right, let's go back to some of the awesome biathlon racing going on. Probably among the most dominant and professional performances in biathlon history, Emilien Jacquelin in the mass start in front of the home crowd. Like, watching that race, I am so impressed. Like, I've been following biathlon my entire life, and I can't express how just absolutely impressed I am with Jacquelin that entire race. Crazy. Just absolutely crazy.
Yeah. And it was at home, like you mentioned, and you could hear the crowd going crazy. Every shot, every inch on the track, you could almost feel like the crowd was kind of pushing him along, like right behind him, and that's kind of what gave him the edge. But that was an incredible race.
Yeah, after the post-race interview, they asked him, you know, you seemed like you were out there in front most of the race, because he did. Like, the whole pack went together in the first loop, and then after that first shooting, he was gone. And he was a solid, like, 100 meters, 150 meters ahead of everyone. And other people shot clean as well, but he just took off. And they asked him, was that the strategy? And he said, yeah. He said he and Quinton Fillmaye, before the start, just said, are we going for it? And Jacquelin was just like, hell yeah, we're going for it. And he went for it. No, but just absolutely incredible. Like, I mean, I can't even, like, just the pressure. And it's not the pressure of, you know, people breathing down your neck, or the pressure of knowing, oh, if I hit the shot, I'll win. It's the pressure of knowing that every single person was watching you. And all the French athletes made a comment of, like, feeling that sort of, like, hush in the air as they came to shoot. Julia Simone even made a comment about it as well. And just, like, knowing. I was nervous. I was nervous when I heard the crowd quiet down. And then I'm like, oh, my God, everyone's watching him. Boom, hit, boom, hit, boom, hit. Just absolutely impressive. And then the skiing as well. Like, you know, it'd be easy for him to sort of back off on the skiing and then, you know, have the crowd catch him, the pack catch him and overtake him. But no, just, yeah, like you said, riding that momentum, riding that wave that the crowd was sort of pushing him around the track. So impressive for Jacquelin.
We talked about him on our last episode about his tactics and kind of our thoughts on them, and we were both a little skeptical on them. But his tactic of planning to shoot clean his first shooting and then just go for it and leave everybody behind and just hope to hold on, that was pretty impressive. Because if you look at the shooting scores, a lot of people had the same shooting score, if not a little better. Like, Felix Leitner in fourth shot clean for the race. Yeah,
shout out to Felix. Really good race for him, too.
That was pretty cool. But Tarjebo, Christensen, Johannes Kuhn, Benedict Dole, Bakken, Benny Vager, they all had one miss, too, but they were all 10 to 45 seconds back, and I think he made up that time right after that first shooting on that second lap.
27 seconds for his first prone clean. And that was, maybe 10th or so. Fastest shooting. And actually, it's kind of funny. Most people who shot quicker than him also shot clean. So I just don't understand how he got out of the range so fast and how he just broke open like that. But I'm going to have to go back and watch because I only watched the race live and then listened to the post-race interview earlier today. But I'm going to have to go back and watch that race again just to, like, maybe now with this knowledge of knowing that he sort of was – he wanted to go for it. It's not that she found himself in first place and he was like, I'm just going to keep pushing. It was a strategy. I have to go back now and watch to see him, you know, see if he made that mental switch to just put in a surge right after leaving the range. But yeah, just absolutely impressive. And then let's see, pulling up, like, I mean, shout out to Anton Samolski as well for having two great weekends. Again, we didn't get an episode out last week, but had a really good race last weekend. And then again, in the top five on a few races this weekend. You know, we talk a lot about Ellen Bekova, and then this year we're talking a lot about Hanna Sola on the women's side. But Belarus has never really had that dude to kind of stand out and, yeah, execute some really good races. So, he's only 25 years old, and in the last two weekends, he's had his first podium ever in Hochfilzen, and now a couple top, you know, flower ceremonies in Anicet Le Grand, Bornand. Man, it's such a long name. yeah, shout out to Anton Samolski. What about Sebastian Samuelsson? The first time we ever saw the red, blue, and yellow bib was Seabass. And then he just quickly lost it. What do you think about Seabass? Is he fading or what's happening?
His ski speed doesn't seem to be fading all that much, but he's definitely missing a lot more targets. And I think that's what's costing him. I don't know what it is, though. I wonder if it's leaving the comfort of home, where they had the first two race weekends in Sweden at home. He knows that range like the back of his hand. That's where they train all summer. And then in Austria, the wheels started to come off a little bit more. And then here in France, we saw that they came off almost completely, just in terms of his relative success. But I don't know. I wonder if he's going to have to think a little long and hard over the Christmas break about what happened so he can fix it before season starts back up.
Yeah. And what's kind of interesting, let's see here. Yeah, so his shooting definitely dropped off in the pursuit, 70%. That was his worst shooting of the season so far. I mean, we're only a couple weekends in. But like his shooting prior to this weekend was about, 85%. He had a couple 100%s and then a couple 80%s, so maybe about 90%. And then this week he had 80% in the sprint, 70% in the pursuit, and then 80% in the mass start. So, yeah, you're right. His shooting was down a little bit. Just trying to pull up to see what his ski times looked like compared to the first couple weekends. Yeah, I mean, he posted his worst ski time of the season in the sprint, but that was the sixth fastest ski time of the race. So, you're right. He's skiing the same. It's just that he dropped down a little bit in the shooting department, and yeah, that suffered, or it made him suffer a little bit. But you know, I read an article about this whole Swedish team in general, because the question was, are they going to continue their massive run? And I think, as we sort of suspected, the Swedes peaked, or they scheduled to peak for Östersund because it's really important for them to do well at home. And they did. They did extremely well. All the Swedish athletes did. And now they're going to start to back off a little bit and focus on Beijing. So while they're racing the World Cup, they're also going to be apparently focusing on training during their off days and getting the volume back up in preparation for Beijing. So the fact that they were able to sort of, you know, put some training back on, a training load back on, and continue to have decent results. I mean, Sebastian was still doing pretty well considering, you know, he was putting the load back on. So, No, I think Sebastian's going to stay in that fight, and he's going to be in there for a while. What about Johannes Tingis Bo? He kind of struggled this week. I was kind of expecting him to start making his amazing comeback because we've seen Roslin start to pick it up a little bit. Eckhoff has started to pick it up a little bit. Even Tandervold has started to pick it up. Again, they're not at peak Norwegian form, but they're starting to get better. Tarja Bo was in the mix this year or this weekend, but we're still not really seeing Johannes. What do you think about Johannes? Is he going to come back after the break?
I think so. I think ski speed wise, he's been competitive within the top 10, but not blowing everyone away like we've seen in previous years. But his shooting has just been letting him down so much this year. And I wonder if the Norwegians' plan is to peak for the Olympics, and that's why their ski speeds are down a little bit. But if you don't have the shooting figured out, then it's going to be a tough season. But I think he'll take the break to figure it out and come back and kind of blow us away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's funny. He's definitely – his average skiing rank is definitely down this year. I mean, last year, lights out, number one all the time. And if he wasn't number one, he was like one – it was like two or three. But – this year, it seems like he has, you know, he'll have like a, you know, 10th fastest ski time, and then a 3rd fastest, and then a 10th, and then a 6th fastest. And finally, he had a number one fastest in the Hochfilzen pursuit. I mean, I guess he did win a race back in Hochfilzen, so kind of like, oh, you know, is he back now? But then, yeah, he just turned it right around with not a great performance in Annecy. So, it's going to be interesting to see if he can come back to peak Johannes Tingsbo form after the holiday break, because it's pretty interesting to see how his ski ranks, like his ski times, which have been his rock, has been kind of letting him down a little bit this year. And then, yeah, he also didn't shoot impressively, insanely well in this week. So, including 75% in the mass start, which is well below the World Cup average. Yeah, I don't know. It's super interesting, and all this stuff is kind of, I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about this later, but all of this, you know, kind of turnaround with our top guys, you know, maybe not performing as much as or as well as we want them to, and then maybe some people who are dominating on the trails are making for some exciting overall action, but we'll talk about that in a second. Let's talk about the women's mass start. I mean, that itself was awesome. Elvira Oiber, two in a row, back-to-back win. It happens like this. We saw Lisa Teresa Hauser last year do the exact same thing, where she sort of burst onto the podium and then boom, 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 just kept backing it up with podium results and wins. So, Elvira Oiber, another win, another day. And... yeah, just another awesome, awesome race by the Swede. And then even, unfortunately, Julia Simone just, again, could not get ahead. Just could not get ahead of her her rival there in front of the home crowd.
Yeah, and, you know, in biathlon, the saying is, if you're going to miss, miss early. And that's exactly what Elvira Oiber did. I mean, she missed one in both her prone shootings, but then cleaned the two standing shootings. And if you look down the list, the rest of the podium members both missed one in both standing shootings. And I think that's kind of what gave her the edge, was that the other two athletes that were on the podium kept going in the penalty loop towards the end of the race, and Oiberg could just go right back out on course, and her legs were fresher towards the end of the race, and her ski speed is just untouchable right now too, which certainly doesn't hurt her.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Doro, suddenly out of nowhere, Doro is like in the fight. I think she was even leading the race for a good bit of it. That was definitely good to see her back up there and fighting for the top spots, because we haven't really seen much of Doro this year. And we haven't really talked about her really at all either. What do you think about Doro? Is she just kind of saving it up for the Olympics, or is she past her prime?
I think she's peaking for the Olympics. I mean, she's every weekend it seems like she's gotten a little better, slowly but surely, and then here she is in the flower ceremony with fourth place, and had she cleaned that last standing and not had a miss, I think she probably would have won this race. Because with one miss in the last standing, she was still only 13 seconds back on Højbjerg, who did take her time going through the finish stretch, but I think she would have been able to hold on if it was just over 20 seconds leaving the range, yeah. And I think she's going to have a good Olympics and good end of the year.
Okay. I a lot of people in the comments section on some of my past videos have been saying that they think Doro's past her prime. And I mean, I was honestly beginning to agree with them, starting off the season in the 37th in the individual, shooting 80%, not great for an individual, but then, kind of leveling out in like the teens, with a 33rd in the sprint in Hochfilzen, not prime Doro fashion. So it's kind of crazy to see her come out of nowhere and just be like 19th in the sprint in Annecy, moves up to 10th, and then all of a sudden fourth in the mass start, shooting 95%, her best shooting of the season so far, with a 15th ski rank, which is one of her best ski ranks of the season this year. So, yeah, we haven't talked much about Doro just because she hasn't really, been that exciting. She hasn't been overly bad like Tyrlekov has been, but she hasn't been overly successful either. So she's just kind of caught in that middle ground of, you know, people who are just like, they're out there. But then what about, someone we haven't talked about is this Kristina Redzova from Russia, like rising in the ranks pretty quickly. I gotta pull up some stats on her from Real Biathlon to see what her situation is, but she's currently ranked 9th overall and had some really good races this weekend. Not too much background on the World Cup. Really only has data going back to, you know, last year. But her shooting is way up this year. Her skiing is way up this year, and she's been posting some really good races. Has 4 top 10 results this year so far. Where like last year she was kind of averaging like in the 40s. So sort of a breakthrough season for Kristina here. Is there anything else that you've been able to dig up about her in the stats?
Nothing really. I mean, like you said, she doesn't have a ton of experience and time on the World Cup, but it's always super impressive when someone kind of breaks through and has those really good few races kind of early on in their World Cup career. And some of them are able to keep it going and hold on, and some of them aren't, and hopefully she's able to. And she's definitely shown that she can compete with the rest of them, both on the skis and on the range. And if she keeps it together for the rest of the season, I don't see why she won't be able to keep climbing the overall standings.
Yeah, on the IBU Cup, she's been really consistent over the last, 3 years actually, consistently posting top 10 ski times. But the thing that's been holding her back on the IBU Cup was her shooting, in specifically her standing shooting. In 2018, oh my gosh, in 2018, her standing average was 58%. Which is not good. That is just, that's just hands down not good. Making her season average 68%. And then last year, she was able to bump up both her prone and her standing. It looks like she didn't do as many races because she was probably in the World Cup more. But she was able to bump up both to 85% and then actually get, you know, a season on the World Cup where she was able to shoot about 85% during the World Cup season. So, it looks like her shooting is on the rise, Her IBU results suggest that her skiing has been consistently one of the faster skiers on the IBU Cup. And as we know from like people like Stina Nielsen and some of these others who are going back and forth between the IBU Cup a little bit this year, the IBU Cup is no joke. And if she can post pretty decent ski times on the IBU Cup and she can improve her shooting a little bit better, I bet we'll see Kristina Rytsova on the World Cup top 10 more frequently as we move towards Beijing. Okay. Men's yellow bib. We are now setting records for the people to hold yellow bibs. We had Fionn Maye. So Christensen, let me go back. We had Christensen wear the yellow bib in Hochfilzen, which he quickly relinquished. Fionn Maye was able to put the yellow bib on for the mass start in Le Grand Bernard. So that was really exciting to see a French dude with the yellow bib in front of the home crowd. And now with his absolutely dominant performance, I can't say enough about how dominant this is, his performance was in the mass start. The dominant performance of Emilien Jacquelin in the mass start has now earned him the yellow bib. And he is going to be our seventh male to wear the yellow bib, and we are done with the first trimester. The first trimester. It's nuts. And all these guys are so close. I mean, there's seven people above 300 points. Johannes Tingis Bo has 310 points. That's 61 points back of Jacqueline. That's literally one win away from gaining all those points back. Obviously, yeah, Jacqueline will probably earn some points to try to keep the lead and, you know, stay ahead. But I mean, it's so close, even within the top five and top six, that if any of these guys has a bad race, you know, they like, and a bad race turns into like 10th place at this point. Like if you're in 10th place, that's a bad race because it's so close right now. Is this heating up to be the most competitive season we've ever seen for the men, or do you think it's going to start to level out?
I think it's going to stay competitive. I mean, the top seven guys in the overall seem to be the ones who are constantly making up the top 10 and throw in a few different names every week. Like Smolski this week and last week has himself an eighth in the overall standing. But I think these top seven guys are going to be battling it out for the overall all season long.
I agree. I mean, yeah, someone who we haven't even talked about is Edward Latyapov. That was a steal on my my fantasy team. He's keeping the team going strong now that Sebastian has cooled off a little bit. But Edward Latyapov currently sitting in fifth place. The Bo brothers, you know that Johannes Tingis is going to Johannes Tingis is probably going to come back and stay strong. Tarja is going to stay strong. There's a little bit of a gap to Smolski and to Stuo, and then, you know, to the rest of the field being Kuhn, Loganov, Cloud, Bakken. But, oh my gosh, like, yeah, seven people up here. I don't think we've seen, like, a breakaway like this in a while. It's usually just Bo and Fourcade, or last year was Bo and Lagrid. Oh my gosh, just having all these guys together is super fun, super exciting, and super great for the sport too. I mean, it's we're going to see what happens. And I mean, I still think Ponsaloma's underperforming. I'd love to see him get up there. Who knows what place he's in, like the 20s or something. and then there's like even Loganov. Like I don't want to support Loganov, but I think he's gonna pick it up as well. I think he's gonna become a regular top 10 guy like he usually is. So, just there's another couple guys there that are gonna come back up and try to fight as well. And then on the women's side, Roysland's kind of pulling away a little bit from Øyburg, but Elvira is, you know, obviously those last two wins to finish out the trimester really helped the cause, kind of narrowed that gap a little bit. Ellen Bekova is sort of flatlining a little bit, but we saw that last year from her. So hopefully she can stay strong through the year. And then, yeah, Hauser and Hanna Øyburg, there's your top five right there. And then there's a really big gap Till Biscon, Brizza, and Herman. But I mean, both scenes are really fun, really competitive, and we still haven't even seen Turlakov mm-hmm. out there. Yeah, it's gonna be crazy.
It almost seems like you can see the yellow bib changing from person to person every race. Yeah. At least on the men's side, which is kind of cool to see, but the pressure these guys must be on, knowing that missing one or two shots can take that away from them, has got to be kind of crazy.
I know, right? Like, that's the crazy thing, is you're literally one shot away. Like, one hit, you know, one missed shot could take that yellow bib away from you, or one extra hit could earn you that yellow bib for the next race. And that's super exciting. All right, let's do our spare round. I mean, first trimester's over. We've had 4 weekends of racing going into the holiday break. Spare round. Who is going to win the overall Crystal Globe at this point? Like, who is your prediction? Let's go men first.
Men first. I'm going to stick with Johannes Tingesbo. I chose him at the beginning of the season. I'm going to stick with him throughout the whole season. And then on the women's side, I think Roysland is going to keep it for the rest of the year. Maybe Elvira Oiberg will wear it one or two times, but I don't know. She quite has the consistency on the World Cup to continuously post top three results. So I'm going to go with Johannes Tingis and Roysland for my two overall winners.
Okay. I'm going to go with Quinten Fils-Maillet because he just seems really consistent. I was a little nervous about the start to his season, but he's immediately snapped back. And then for the women, I mean, Roysland's got a big lead right now. And then we got Hauser, Hanna Oiberg. Honestly, I'm going to go Hanna Oiberg. I know she's like fifth in that, you know, group of five girls, but she's just going to be, I don't know, more consistent.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, hit the like button down below. Share it with your biathlon friends. Either way, the link is down below in the description, whatever platform you're listening to this on. We are on Google, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. So, yeah, check out that link down below. Send us a voice message, and we hope that you all have a happy holiday season. We'll see you after the break.